Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com, author of the Prayer Prescription Series and creator of the webinar series, Google Hangout webinar series, Uprooting Our Fear of Death and Bringing Death Out of the Closet. We will be doing several vignette-type webinars going forth into February and March, and I look forward to that. My guest this evening is Joshua Jordan Gray, who refers to himself as the co-author of The Seventh Major Understanding, A Message of Awakening. The teacher of the spiritual philosophy is Joshua, a non-physical being. Jordan began channeling Joshua in 1980, and he became a diligent student of The Seventh Major Understanding from that moment on. After 30 years of learning and living the spiritual concepts of oneness, he collaborated with Joshua to write the book. Jordan and Joshua enjoy an inseparable connection, and they both love talking to people. So we're very excited to have Jordan on our show. Welcome, Jordan.
Hi, Kate.
How are you?
Oh, I'm just doing great today. How are you?
Yeah, it's a beautiful day. This probably a lot colder here than it is where you are located, and I'm still living in an ice slide. Every now and then we'll have a little bit of a thaw, and then everybody can walk again on the snow. And we had a lot of snow, and then it freezes down to zero at night, and you think it's still soft, you know, and you go out and you fall. I'm actually very happy to say I didn't fall, but we saw three people fall the other day, and that was kind of terrifying, to say the least.
Yes. Ice is very treacherous.
Oh, it is, and it's very dangerous. But, Jordan, you know, tell us about the Seventh Major Understanding, A Message of Awakening, and how did all of this come about for you, this wonderful journey of awakening for yourself?
Gladly. The Seventh Major Understanding, if I were to try to sum it up in just a word, the focus is oneness. The message of awakening is just coming out of our slumber so that we all remember our oneness with all that is and with one another. So the book itself offers ideas that lead us toward letting go of some of our separation habits. And we have lots of them. And
that's for sure.
There's a message entwined within the book, too, to recognize that there's nothing wrong with human nature and that our human and spiritual nature really are one. You cannot separate them either. There's no separation between mind, body, spirit. There's no separation between human nature and spiritual nature. They are intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really kind of the focus of the message. And one of the ways go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
I was just going to say that the way I was kind of drawn toward this was really a deep inner calling, if you will. I felt compelled to work in this area. When I was, I'll just not say how old I was, but in the 70s, I started reading the Seth books. And as I read them, it was like this remembering experience. I had that, I remember this information. I know this. And at the same time, under that, there was this draw to want to become a channel. And I thought, well, if Jane Roberts can channel, so can I. I started diligently developing and looking for ways to open my channel and to bring through any benevolent entity that wanted to speak to people. So that is how I got into this. And then remembering Joshua, who is the source of my soul, it just became so natural to channel Joshua because that is the source from which I come. So it's so easy, and that's how we have developed this really entwined collaboration so that I could write the book, and I can actually speak for Joshua now without having to do any change of brainwave patterns for channeling, which in the beginning I had to do. I really worked hard at learning how to lower my brainwave activity from the beta state to alpha state and then at lower alpha states so that I could relax enough to make sure I cleared the channel for Joshua to speak to people. And over the years of our working together, that evolved as well.
Well, did somebody take dictation when you would originally start, you know, when you first started to talk for Joshua? Was there somebody, or did you actually remember, or were you able, was it automatic writing, or how did that work?
Well, you know, one of my contracts, you know, I was taught by a medium, that's what we called them back in the day, right? I was taught to make contracts with spirit that you want to work with, and I was so hungry for the learning that my contract was, I want to remember everything you teach. I want to remember everything you say. So when I channel, I want to be able to have my consciousness available also to receive information and to remember it. So that is how my study of the seventh major understanding began.
Well, when you think about it, that's fantastic that you were able to make that intention, because for, as an example, Jane Roberts and Edgar Casey and many other channels don't remember a thing about what, you know, and they have, well, in the case of Jane Roberts, her husband, Robert Butts, was the one taking the dictation, you know, and they wrote these great books. So I, just as an aside, I had a thrilling experience before Christmas where I actually went to the ARE, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, and saw Edgar Casey's couch where he did all of his trance medium work. And this it was, like, so incredible to see the couch there because I had never seen it. And he would lay down and go into a sleep, you know. That was the way he did it. So how did you originally do it? So you said you were conscious and able to move about freely, it sounds like, and instead of sitting or lying down, right?
Well, in the beginning, I did recline in a recliner, and I would have to do some deep breathing and really still my consciousness, go into a meditative state of stillness. And that was an exercise for me, and the more I practice it, you know, the better you get. Anything you practice, the better you get at.
That's right.
So I would at first have to do a great deal of deep breathing and relaxation. And I didn't, I wasn't able to open my eyes to channel or walk around and channel. And yet, as we worked together, I learned that there is a different, for me anyway, there's a different channel that's constantly open. And I don't have to do anything special to tune into it. It's like changing the radio dial, you know, just changing from one station to another, so to speak. And I don't have to do anything special to find the channel on which Joshua speaks.
Well, that must be an interesting mind shift to do that.
It is a shift. That is true. And it is really subtle within me now. But my friends, my close friends, will tell me they notice a difference in my vibration, or they'll notice a difference in just the way I pronounce some words. It's a really interesting thing how they notice the shift more than I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, because it's second nature to you now.
Yes.
So we were
kind of like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, kind of like, go ahead.
Kind of like Abraham Hicks. She's able to be quite mobile while bringing through the collective Abraham. So I have grown in that direction. so that I can also be very mobile and still tune in to Joshua.
Oh, that's great. That is. I think that's a wonderful evolution of how this all happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fear-based reality, and we were talking, there is a certain opposite to the love-based reality. And when, in my own work lately, we've been exploring bringing death out of the closet, and I've had 5 Google Hangout webinars where I've interviewed interesting experts on the topic. So, so, you know, I know that death really doesn't exist and that nobody really ever dies, but that is not the way the culture sees it. And the culture, and our culture especially, is terrified of death and dying, terrified of getting older, and reveres youth, you know. So how do you and Joshua how do you reconcile that in the work that you do?
Well, first of all, there is a recognition that for a population of the people, death in their imagination is total annihilation. It is the end of existence. So there is a fear that within them about the unknown of what would it really be like to be totally annihilated, I guess. And so their fear creates resistance, and they don't want to think about it. They don't want to talk about it. You know, they just don't want to give any energy toward thinking about it because they're afraid, because they really think it is the end of their existence. For other people, there is this population that fears the potential pain. You know, we don't ever know the manner of our death, and we resist pain. It's a natural human energy to want to resist pain. So some people think, well, if my death is going to be painful, I don't want any part of that. They resist that. There's this fear about, I don't want to go through the pain. And then in another way of looking at it, there are the people like you and I who have lost beloved ones, and we know how that hurts and how that breaks the heart, and that we miss them and we feel the loss. So when it comes to death in that regard, then we have a resistance to, I don't want to feel the grief of it. I don't want to lose any more of my loved ones, because the grief is a real struggle. And yet we all live through it. At some point in the lifetime, we all go through the grief of death. So there are lots of reasons in our culture why death could be such a trigger subject that brings up fear within people. What we want to do is bring about the recognition that life is eternal. And this moment is eternal. It cannot be lost ever, forever. There was no beginning to it, and there is no end. There is, you know, only now. So our consciousness survives a physical incarnation, and our personality survives passing on of the shuffling off of the mortal coil, as you might say.
Wow.
That's an expression, I think, Shakespeare. I think Shakespeare said that, but don't quote me. I'm not certain. I know I heard it passed on through literature somewhere.
Yes. Well, they say that people kind of shed their, it's like shedding a coat, taking off a coat, and just taking off everything probably, and just walking naked into the point is that probably people don't go anywhere when they die. That's what I have been gathering. Yeah. It's not like there's another world, or that all these dimensions exist at once. And, you know, that's just what is going on. And we often, people, as you say, believe in the annihilation of probably the body, which I think is probably true, but they don't understand that the soul is what lives on.
Right. Yes. And
yeah,
so,
because
there only is here, there is only here, consciousness is only present here. So where can it go?
If there isn't
any destination that it can go to when consciousness is only present here and only present now. Yeah. So where can it go? And yet some people have these visions of, you know, okay, when I die, then I want to go. So I think I'm going to move to some place that's heavenly. You know, there's no more pain to suffer and no more struggles to endure. So I'm going to this place that is like a restful, peaceful, beautiful place. And I also understand and align with this in Joshua's teaching, because he says no matter which dimension of reality you find your consciousness in, you create your own reality. No matter where you find consciousness, which can only be here, by the way, you create your own reality. So if and when you are removed from 3D earthly movements, you can imagine and create the reality you want to experience. So let it be heavenly. You know, let there be music playing and angels singing or whatever it is you desire. Let it be that pleasant.
I believe you're right. It's the belief. Our belief system is what formulates our experience when we drop the body.
Yeah, as it does right now. Our belief system creates our entire reality, always. And that's another thing that Seth, if you studied the Seth books, his point was that we're here to remember that. We are actually here to remember that we create our own reality.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so the Nature of Personal Reality was a book that we studied in study groups. We discussed it constantly. We read it 5 to 10 to 25 times. And that was an interesting experience in those days. And it was a lot of people were coming together and discussing these ideas. But to me, the Seth Speaks book was the most poignant for me. That somehow I had my own shift as I read that book, and I will never forget it. You know, I was sitting in a restaurant waiting to go to a horrible job, and there was something in that book that talked about probably the eternal ongoingness of consciousness, and how, you know, his language was so interest. The word that comes to mind was gestalt, you know, the gestalt language of Seth. And suddenly I had an awakening in this restaurant, waiting to go to a shitty job. And I was never the same since, you know.
Yes, yeah. And
it's all great.
Yeah,
it's
Seth,
all good. Yeah.
Seth books opened up my mind too, Kate. And the first one of the Seth books I read was Seth Speaks. Also, and it was like, oh, I remember this. This is important that I remember this.
Yeah,
and I just loved it. And I agree with you that there were many people into it at that time in the 70s. So
yeah,
I wanted to get back a little bit to talking about, you know, how we ended up in this fear-based reality, if I may.
Oh, please, yeah.
Okay, so. The early human species on the planet didn't have it as easy as we do. You know, they couldn't just go to the refrigerator and get food, and they couldn't close the door to the shelter and keep out the animals that might be hunting them. So they had to be on high alert. You know, they had to hunt and forage every day to find enough to eat. And in that search, sometimes there was a scarcity. Perhaps there had been a flood, or maybe there had been some disaster, some snow and ice that kept the food from being plentiful or available. So they started to get this notion that sometimes there's just not enough, and that creates fear. And then there was also this idea that there's danger, there are other packs of animals that also hunt and want to prey upon the weak or the slow. So there was scarcity and there was danger. So this part of our brain in our human development is very well developed. It's very ancient in its roots, and it serves an important purpose because sometimes there is danger, and we need to be able to respond quickly to that danger, and that is our survival instinct. We have this deeply ingrained survival instinct. So when we transform that, though, into the modern day, when we bring that fear of scarcity and danger into the modern day, it gets distorted when we might look at another human being and think, oh, he's a snake, or he's a wolf. You know, and we start to see danger from our fellow man. And we start to think also that, you know, the bigger, the stronger, the brute, or whoever might have the biggest club can also take what I have. maybe if there was a scarcity of food and I finally just got enough to eat today and the brute didn't, he could come and take it from me. Right? Oh, there went my meal. it's like being beat up on the playground for your lunch money. So in the human development, there is a part of our brain that is naturally wired for survival. And it will do whatever it needs to do to survive. So when you've got that energy underlying all of our activity, naturally underneath that there's going to be a fear of death. Because death supposedly is the end of our survival. So you see how the two got mixed up, and so to bring us into an age where we have less fear around conversations of death, or that we can move through our grief processes more gracefully, because we're still going to grieve, we're still going to have sorrow at the loss of a beloved one. And yet knowing that it's not the end of that personality, knowing that that person goes on, can bring some peace. And religion, in a way, has tried to provide that as well.
Jordan, go ahead. Just before we hit the 30-minute mark, I would like you to just tell our listeners where they can find you on the web, you know, the main website that you would like people to go to.
Certainly, Kate. Thanks for asking. My website is 7th, that's the number 7th, 7thmajoruNderstanding.com. And I'm also on Facebook, and I invite people to communicate with me there. I love to connect with folks. So that's facebook.com/7thmajoruNderstanding. So
and we are talking to Jordan. Yes, and we're talking to Jordan Gray. So yes, I think that all of these survival instincts get all mixed up, and that does seem to be what it's all about. And also, the survival instincts are very confusing because they emphasize that separation that we were talking about in the beginning here, when people are struggling to survive in this manner that promotes fear. There's no way in the world that you feel interdependent, loving feelings towards anybody, let alone yourself.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, Kate, because the one energy that can override and melt fear instantly is love. And we see people using their love for humanity to override their fear of death a lot. For example, the soldier that might throw his body on a grenade to save his buddies, that's love. And he does it, he overrides his own fear of death to protect others. And in nature we see this, and of course in humans we see this as well. A parent, you know, a mother or a father may stand in the face of danger and even put their own life at risk to protect the young, because that's how the species survives, of course. And yet Firemen, for example, a fireman will go into the face of danger, sacrifice his own safety and perhaps his life to save another person. This is love. That is
the only
energy I know of that can melt fear practically in an instant. So as we move out of the fear-based reality, we gracefully shift into this love-based reality. And in that time, I do think our entire way of living with one another will change. We will usher in a time of peace on earth. We will usher in a time where love is the dominant energy rather than fear. And we will be able to provide abundance for all, abundance of everything for everyone. And maybe that's not materialistic abundance, but I'm talking about enough food for everyone, education for everyone, good health for everyone.
Right.
It can be done. And this is the transition that we're in. So,
well, I'm curious because at this point in the transition, there is some dire things going on, and in terms of the climate and in terms of the earth. And I have no doubt that the earth is going to survive. But people seem to be so people really seem misled. And lately I've been thinking, well, is there going to be a mass extinction of human life? What do you or Joshua say about that?
Okay, now you're getting into a very complex area where there is already, you know, because there is only now and all is existing at once, there already is a dimension of reality in which we have a planet of abundance, peace, and harmony, and humanity survives. There's also a planet where the human race, because of its own errors, shall we say, its own mistakes in lack of stewardship for the planet, become nearly extinct. So these two exist. It's kind of like you wouldn't ever know you were happy if you hadn't gone through ever being sad, you see? So these two, and it's more than two, I mean, there's a continuum of realities that are probable for humanity.
Yeah.
But
probable
just to get
reality.
Down to what... Yeah, probable realities. So just to get down to what you're saying, though, Earth is robust and strong and healthy. And Earth will survive with or without the human species.
Right.
It's up to us, yes, to play the role we need to play as stewards of the planet if we want to go on living here comfortably. So
yes,
it's
a
lesson
vibration.
For humanity.
It is, and it's like bringing in the love vibration and bringing in the stewardship and also creating a strong immune systems in the people we love. But there's more and more people are as a nurse, I see this, that there's a strong preponderance of people who are weaker, becoming weaker. Their immune systems are getting weaker. You know, Monsanto and genetic engineering and all this kind of thing is weakening people. There's a huge increase in cancer and this sort of thing. So that what you're saying seems to me to be related to this weakening of people who the survival of the fittest and all that kind of stuff is, even though it's kind of an outdated theory, it isn't really, because there's going to be a survival of the fittest, I think, with the strong, I think love is the thing that will heal it all.
Yes. And the strong have always survived.
Yeah.
So that's not really a change in animal kingdom.
No.
In the animal kingdom, the weak do fall, the sick do fall, the lame will fall. So the strong will go on, and that is how the species continues and can grow stronger, right? The procreation of the strong with each other creates strong offspring. So the herd, so to speak, might thin out. a little bit, you know. And yet, we can provide more than plenty for everyone who's already here if we just learn to share our resources and spread them around properly, rather than hoard them, rather than have a nation that throws 40% of its food away. Guess who does that? The United States.
I know.
You know, when there are hungry all over the world. So, and there are even hungry in our country. So we're learning ways, though, to get some of that food to those who need it. And when we also begin to live in cooperation with all nations, then we can also share our resources and our plentiful food with the world.
So I would say that the work that you do is helping people move and shift from a fear-based into a love-based reality. And there's all kinds of work out there that's doing that, and that's what's helping people to make that shift. You know, there's a lot of very brave people who want to make a difference in the world, and it's based on the things that you're teaching, and it seems to be a huge amount of people who are going in that direction, but a lot of people, probably the majority of people, are not. But It is all coming to fruition, I'd say.
I agree with you, Kate. I think there are many teachers, healers, and leaders of change who have incarnated at this time to help this transition. And while it seems to be happening very gradually, in truth, there will become a tipping point where...
Yes.
You know, perhaps you've heard of, critical mass. A critical mass of consciousness will occur, and then it will just be like, oh, it's always been this way. We've always loved each other and taken care of one another. You know, we've always lived together in peace and harmony. So at this time, though, there are many voices and there are many pathways. You know, the teachers who are bringing us fitness and nutrition and those things, and then there are the teachers who are more focused in the spiritual, metaphysical directions. You know, there are teachers of all kinds who are here right now doing this work. And I want to point out, if I may, that transition is change, right? And what a lot of people fear, change. So as we're going through change, there are these, let me call them exaggerated acts on the global stage of the fear that is being repressed, perhaps, or expressed inappropriately. So when we don't know how to acknowledge our fear and express it correctly, it becomes repressed or denied. Oh, no, I wasn't afraid. And then it leaks out on the global stage in ways that are exaggerated. And the purpose of the exaggeration is to be sure to get our attention, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so these exaggerated acts on the global stage right now that absolutely cannot escape our attention. People acting out in certain lands to try to gain their independence, their freedom, those things. You know, we are not to miss that. That's important.
That is.
And we
Arab
want, and
Spring,
so they,
you know?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The Arab Spring and the Occupy movement, that sort of thing. It's just been tremendously, and has enlivened the whole human race.
Right. And when we can say, you know, I feel fear, or I have feelings of fear, and I can work with that, rather than letting my fear just take over and I'm reacting out there without thinking. That's a part of the shift as well. To get out of the fear-based reality, we need to become conscious of the purpose of our fear. It serves an important purpose. We won't do away with it. Fear won't vanish. Even in a love-based reality, I might accidentally step out in front of a bus. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. And need that fear response within my body in order to move quickly to ensure my survival. So fear has its place, and the place is in ensuring the survival of the species. Fear has its place in my growth, in my personal growth. So let's say I'm in a social environment and perhaps I'm afraid to talk to people, you know, when I recognize I have feelings of fear and my fear is around being vulnerable to other people.
Yeah.
So we start to recognize, why do I have fear and how do I work through it in a constructive way rather than, oh my God, I feel my fear, I'm reacting to it and I'm running away. So the global transition right now, the change sure looks like it's causing a lot of reaction on the global stage.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great deal of reaction. So it's a indicator to me that internally there's still a great deal of repressed fear or denied fear. Even
right.
those who act out violently sometimes will deny that they did it out of fear. They think they did it out of anger. It's like, whoa, go deeper. You see, anger is a secondary emotion. There's a primary root to it. Go deep. So we live in exciting times, don't we, Kate?
Yes. This is a good time to live because it is more than interesting. More than
Absolutely.
Interesting. So just getting back to the fear of death and bringing death out of the closet, it seems like the last thing to really be brought out and exposed on for the mass consciousness is this fear of death. And, you know, it's reflected in Hollywood. It's reflected in medicine. It's reflected talking to people whenever you speak about somebody dying, people act like it's the worst thing they ever heard that could ever happen. And it's funny because death is not seen as a natural process. Even birth in our society isn't seen as a natural process. Everybody wants to be drugged to the up the yin yang. Nobody is doing things naturally. You know, nobody's doing things naturally. So, and death is not a natural process either. So what we're going to do here is in my hometown, or actually, I think I'm going to do a Google Hangout with five of the people I've already interviewed. We're going to do a death cafe, a cyber death cafe, where the five of us will, and the six of us will, talk about death in a natural way. You know, death is natural. It is part of life. And that is what people have lost. That's what I think is the crux of what people have lost.
So, Jordan, tell me, in fact,
if you would like to join the Hangout, you may. It's just a matter of teaching you how to do a Google Hangout. Tell me what the final words you would like to tell our audience right now. A final thought.
Well, a final thought, I guess, would be, this is how Joshua ends his comments when he talks to groups, and it's what I call his simple plan for living. He just says, let the light grow, let love show, and let it be fun.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I guess I would
like to
leave.
People forget how to have fun, don't they?
Yeah, people forget how to have fun. We take
it
all too seriously, and I think that's a good point about death. We take it all too seriously. So we need to remember that. Yeah, it can be fun, too.
I don't know if you're the one who posted this. I saw a picture of the fact that children smile and laugh, you know, anywhere from 600 to 1,000 times a day, and adults just have forgotten how to even smile. So there you have it, I think. It's right there.
And one of the simple ways that we let love show is just to smile at each other.
It's a beautiful thing. Well, Jordan, it's so great to connect with you again. I've had a wonderful time. I have missed you, but certainly have thought about you often. And let's do this again. And like I said, if you want to do a Google Hangout about the fear of death, do a death cafe, let's put it that way, where we're talking about death in a natural way, looking at death as if it's a natural process, I can show you how to do a Google Hangout, no sweat.
Well, very good. We'll be in touch then.
Okay.
And
you have a lovely evening.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Love to you. Love to you. And have a beautiful rest of your day.
Ditto.
All right.